This is a tape for the oral history project, Voices of Faith, Years of Change. Today is April 27th, 1995. The narrator is Ed Goldscheider, the interviewer, Sister Sally Witt. We are at the Goldscheider Farm outside of Tarentum. We can just begin. You were telling me about your grandfather and the new town and the old town.
In Europe, yes, that's the times that we did decide to talk about things. Grandfather didn't have very much to say. He spoke Slovak and I didn't, but it was always me working with Grandfather around the farm, following him around to go bring the cows in from across the road and help him in the barn. And Grandfather was an active man. He worked in the coal mines, and in Europe, he was a glass blower, and he told me about Aunt Mary, who was the oldest daughter, going with him to the glass house. She was 12 years old, to help him with his work. And when they came home, why, the family got together, and but that's the way they worked. Families worked with the father. And the town that they came from, my dad only told me that it was called Nova Huta, which means new town, and as compared to old town, the part of the town across the river.
What river do you know?
I don't know the name of the river. I never asked the details because it just never occurred that that would be something that you would want to know someday. But Grandfather, I have his birth certificate. He was born in 1875. And he had to have his birth certificate to get his passport, and they traveled back and forth 9 times back to Europe and back to this country. And
you said they, who?
He and my grandmother, who died in the 30s when I believe I was about 3 years old, and Grandfather died in May in 1948, and he was 72, and he would still climb the silo and throw the silage out. It was a 40-foot silo, and with no chute on it, and then throw it into a steel wheelbarrow and wheel it up to the barn and feed the cows, and we all worked together. He was a great guy. He knew how to make a whistle out of a piece of elderberry stick, and you know, with his big jackknife, and fixed my toys, and sat on the bench and smoked his cutty pipe, and typical old country gentleman. I considered him a gentleman, but he was a hard-working man. He was a cutter in the mines, worked in the coal mines, and he was a good man.
He worked in the coal mines and had a farm.
Yeah, they originally had a farm, Rich Hill, somewhere above Glassmere, that area towards Russellton. They had a farm there. I don't know how big it was. And then when they came to this farm where we are today in 1924, they brought their horses, their team, and they walked their cattle up the road, and my uncles and my aunts came on a wagon and came to this farm. And the first year there wasn't any hay in the fields. It was run down. The farms were not abandoned, but the house wasn't used for several years, and there were groundhogs under the house, and they had to buy hay from some of the neighbors to get through the first year, and they continued to improve the farm. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what brought your grandfather to this country in the first place?
I don't really know if it was the war. He talked about Franz Joseph, you know, the king in those days, and whether it was just for opportunities, better opportunities, but they went back and forth 9 times, so they surely weren't refugees. And he left his brothers there, Rudolf and Adolf, and others that I maybe don't remember or didn't hear mentioned. And then he and his brothers that came here, his brother George and Clifford, and George lived in Glassmere, and Clifford worked in this country for a while. He was a steward on an ocean liner between New York and India, and I'd seen some of the menus that he had set up, but I was never lucky enough to get one. And he lived in California for many years, and I had married a woman whose family had a hotel in New York, and he used to come here during the winter or holidays and bring a wooden box of cactus candy. He wore cowboy boots, and he was really, you know, the ace in the hole, that rich uncle that someday will bring you something. And he brought me a gift one time, a model airplane kit, and that was some of the greatest things I ever had.
I never heard of cactus candy.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was something like gumdrops or a soft candy like that, and it was, and it was in a box that with a lid that was driven on with nails, and you had to pull it off. I mean, this was back in the 30s and 40s, and it was great.
And what is your ethnic heritage?
It's Slovak. My grandfather spoke German, but I assume that the language in Austria, the newspapers are written in German, and my father spoke Slovak, and mother spoke Slovak. Mother was born in Cheswick, and her maiden name was Palko. And my father, he knew Hungarian because he was taught it in schools when Slovakia was being, you know, taken over by Hungary. And he used to say to the cows, "Uése," which means "get over," and that was in Hungarian. When you wanted to wash a cow or milk a cow, you had to have her removed. You said "Uése."
And yet your name has a German sound to it. How do you think about that?
It may be Austrian. I don't know really why Goldscheider is Slovak. I never thought of it as being anything else. It has several German connotations, like a worker in silver or gold or something like that, I've heard, but I don't really know.
I noticed that while I was waiting for you, and that's one reason why I asked, because it looks like it's a German.
Yes.
Were you aware of your ethnic heritage when you were a child growing up?
Oh, certainly, because everybody spoke Slovak. My Aunt Mary, every Sunday the family would come to the farm and we'd have chicken soup, and the language was Slovak. And I never learned to speak, and I don't know why, because I was interested in it, because just out of self-defense, because you don't know if they might sell you to the gypsies, and they were talking in Slovak, and that was a threat. If you didn't behave, you would be sold to the gypsies.
Did you know what gypsies were when you were
Oh, certainly. Yeah, certainly. They were those people in a buggy that stole the chickens and that did things that were like nomadic. And the joke that we always heard was, "Do you know how to make Hungarian goulash?" And they say, "No." Well, the first thing you do is steal two chickens. So we knew who the gypsies were.
You remarked, "This is home." Is this where you lived all your life then?
Yes, personally, I was born in the farmhouse, the old farmhouse right here.
Mm-hmm.
And so was my sister Mary Ann, born before me, and my sister Shirley 6 years later. Mm-hmm. And we lived here and went to school, one-room school in Clinton Township, and we went to St. Clement to get religious education, and the nuns taught us at St. Clement's.
Did you go into Tarentum for that?
Yes, every Sunday we drove in. Sometimes I think religious education was on Thursdays. We had to go an extra day, or sometimes we went on Sundays while the Mass was being said. The nuns would teach us down under the church in the basement and teach the catechism.
Do you remember what that was like?
It was, the nuns were strict, and I recall praying, and the nun came and took my fingers and twisted my thumbs over because I should have had them crossed instead of straight up. So,
you
mean the nuns still don't do that? But Sister Easter Rose, I remember, and the nuns were very important people to us. The nuns would come here from St. Clement's every year for a little picnic, and Mother would make some hamburgers, and we had a table under the trees in the yard. And during the summer months, Mother would always, we always had a big garden, and her brother Frank Pelko, they had a big garden, and Thursday was market day. They'd gather up the garden truck and take it down through Natrona and go around the towns, mostly in Natrona, and then up maybe up to West Trenum. And if there was a bushel of apples or a bushel of potatoes or some tomatoes that didn't sell, we took them to the nuns, to the convent house at St. Clement's, and always had something for them. We came in, and sometimes my sister and I maybe had to go to the nuns for some special instruction, and we had a cup of tea with the nuns. They made us tea, and it's the first time I ever saw anybody put milk in tea. And so the nuns have, you know, really influenced me. As a farm boy, the nuns were very stable and a strong force. Felt that they were very special people.
What was that grade school like in Clinton Township?
It was a one-room frame school with a pump out front and two outhouses on the side and a coal house, and was a big pot-bellied stove in the center and the kerosene lights on the walls and a big blackboard across the front. And I think there were about 35 students or more in all eight grades in one room. And the first teacher I remember was in third grade, Mr. Lindy, and a very strict teacher. And then we had Miss Gaylord, and I think I went there all eight grades and finally went to high school. But in those years, your class got up and went to the big table in the middle of the room and had the lesson for each class there. And when you went back to your seat, you could take part or listen to the class above you. And both my sister and I and one other boy skipped sixth grade. We went from fifth to seventh because it was an opportunity to learn a little faster if you were able to. And it was an interesting time. I remember a box lunch social where the older girls made up a lunch in a box, and then the farm boys came around and they bid on, you know, the lunch boxes, so many dollars, and then they sat and ate with these girls, and that was a box lunch social. But I was too young to be involved in that at that time. But the school has been torn down, and a coal mine came in and used that as a place to dump bony, so that's all gone. But the old bridge is still there. It says 1915 on the, and the commissioners who built the bridge near the school in a little run down there, and it was a very interesting time.
How did your parents feel about you getting an education?
Well, it was necessary, of course, to get, you know, to be, to know how to manage your affairs. As far as college was concerned, it wasn't something that a farmer really needed, and the farmer needed me. The farm needed me more than I needed college, and I had an opportunity to go to get some free education at Gulf Research. I had very good grades in high school, and Dad said, well, you already have a job, and I'm pleased that I stayed on the farm. I've done well. We have 550 acres and a good running farm, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. Never felt that there was something better or something more satisfying, something else I'd rather do. I worked at thoroughfare markets and worked in construction and other things related to the farm, and the farm's taught me everything I ever wanted to know: construction, building, you know, repair, engine repair, welding, cutting, knowing the animals, and there was always opportunities to go and look at other things being done. And Penn State University that sends out flyers, and now that I'm older, I get involved in the same organizations in more of a teaching way, and teaching conservation and starting associations like the Butler County Woodland Owners Association, and teaching other people how to be better stewards of what they have.
This is something I wanted to ask you later on, but maybe I'll ask you now. What are the changes you've seen in agriculture?
Well, when I was in high school in Buffalo Township, every farm, every house was a farmhouse. And now, if it is a farmhouse, it's been remodeled and repainted, and mm-hmm. somebody else lives there. And it seems like there's a complete reversal. As we drove into Trenum, you got there, you saw all the houses and the people on the street. Now those same people are out on the farm living in the new houses, in the cornfields, in the woods. And St. Clement's, there aren't too many people. They're a church, and they've changed the way I still live here, but I'm in a very small minority. There are very few farmers. There used to be a farm with a small dairy, every other farm shipping milk, either Fuhr's Dairy or Fairmont Creamery in West Virginia, and there's just a few left. Those farms are all built up, the frontage lots are sold off, and there are houses on them, and just a different attitude. As far as the economy, the farm prices were always less than desirable. Back years ago, you could make a living selling some produce down into the towns, and I recall as a child my grandfather butchering a calf and hang it up in the garage and then wipe it down and cover it with white muslin cloth and take it down to the butcher shops in West Trenum, to Palgan's and others, and made some money with that. And our milk went to Fuhr's Dairy and on Saxonburg Road. You probably passed it on, well, no, you didn't on the way out. It's closer to 228. And most of the farmers sent their milk there or to Kramer's. And now Kramer's dairy building, it's a restaurant and it has a real estate agent's office in it. Right across the street is 356 Theater, so there's no trace mm-hmm. of the old dairy there anymore. That's completely erased. And coming back from St. Clement's on a Sunday, we would stop at Fuhr's Dairy and buy four 100-pound bags of whey feed supplement and grind feed for the cattle for the week. And that was kind of the way we traveled and what we did when we went to church. It was mm-hmm. still the farm. We had to get up early enough to get all the work done and get to 9:30 Mass at St. Clement's and then get back. And
how early would that be?
Well, we were always in the barn at 6 o'clock, and my father and I, and we had a hired man years ago when the immigration came. Every farmer had a man who lived on the farm, quite a few of them who didn't perhaps have a family, and he stayed there and helped with the cattle. And, like I remember Gatus's and Kladnik's, there was Zayats and Podolan, and they just had one name, like Liberace, you know, you didn't know what their first name was. I didn't. Maybe somebody else knew. And these men worked on the farm and helped with the thrashing and digging the potatoes and worked with the horses.
That's one of the things I would ask you. Who lived in your home when you were growing up? Would these men have done it?
When I was growing up, my Uncle Rudy, whose picture I showed you with his first Holy Communion, and he would leave the farm and go down to Allegheny Ludnam to work. And my mother would pack him his lunch, you know, pie, homemade pie, and well, she baked bread, and then he'd come back and help on the farm. And eventually, he got married to Anna Gulick, whose brother and father had a butcher shop in Glassmere. And then Anna Gulick's brother, John, married my aunt, they would always come for the holidays, and there was a close relationship there between the Gulicks and the Goldschiders. And during the Depression, why my cousins that lived in Glassmere, the Carlos, they would stay all summer, and maybe somebody else would come out and stay. There was always a house full of people here, especially during the summer, help with the hay. And the regular hired man was Paul Shubik, who was his father lived in Trenum, and he lived on a farm. He had lived on another farm as a child, just making his way. And Joe Mojack was another young man that lived here, and the family, it was like maybe a broken family, and the boy was given to someone to live with and made his way from farm to farm. And it was a very loving relationship. It was, you know, family was family. I mean, and it was never taken advantage of. And hunting season, you know, they all went and hunted. But on a typical day, Paul Shubik and my dad, when I was too young to work in the barn, would feed the cattle and milk. And in the early days, my grandfather and my grandmother lived here, and grandmother died in about 35 or 6. I just vaguely remember her in the casket. She was laid out here in the farmhouse. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, my mother and dad, and then my sister and I, and then later my younger sister. There are 4 bedrooms and a room on 2 rooms on the third floor. And during the summers in the Depression, my cousins would come and stay up there or sleep on the back porch. And it was a very active time. And I remember grandfather going back to visit in Glassmere, and the trolley ran in Natrona Heights. And he always liked to see the Western movies. And Steve Durango was the guy he liked the way he rode a horse, you know.
Was he a cowboy?
He was a cowboy. And grandfather would always caution me, don't tell my dad that we went to 2 movies on the Saturday afternoon. But he enjoyed that, and he would stay at Aunt Mary's in Glassmere and spend the weekend with his daughter. And it was an interesting time.
How do you celebrate holidays?
Well, in those days, when Christmas was coming, why, we would always look forward to that. My mother would start to make kolach, and she made the bobolki and everything that went with the Christmas Eve dinner, the Vilya dinner. And that was, we would go to church and then stop back after church at either Aunt Mary's and Glassmere, my dad's sister's, or one of my mother's sisters, and stop and visit for a while, or back at my mother's father's farm, the Talco farm. It's on the road from Trenum here, and maybe have dinner there and spend some time. And as a child, I got to play with my cousins, and it was a good time. We'd go to 9:30 Mass mostly. Midnight Mass was pretty much out of it because we had to be up early in the morning. And we enjoyed the church and the farm. We're kind of working together. The farm, of course, demanded you be there, but we always tried to make the Mass. And I always felt that the priest had a Mass for the farmers, that we could get our work done and make the 9:30 Mass and get back. Because there were a lot of farmers that I knew, that we knew, that along the Ridge Road, Shateras and Volkas and Shutars, Durkaks lived on that Ridge Road. And Dad used to have a thrashing machine, and I still have his old pad where he charged so many cents a bushel to thrash the wheat and the oats. And he used to take the tractor and the threshing machine and do the threshing for the farmers on Ridge Road. And then out this way, coming this way on the Saxonburg Road, the Varuses and Peranicas and Palcos and Pucals and these people who, these farmers, who went to St. Clement's, lived out this way, and they had to do their milking before they went to church.
They didn't have the thrashing machine.
One farmer usually had a thrashing machine. It was a big machine, and Dad was the one who went around. He had a route, and he went towards Freeport, down to Millerstown, and around Trenum, and thrashed. The farmers would cut their grain with a binder, and then shock the sheaves, and if you didn't get to them, then they would bring the sheaves in the barn and put them over the overshot above the barn floor, and then throw the sheaves into the thrashing machine. And that always took a crew of 12 or 14 men with horses and tractors and wagons. And you took the grain and put it in the granary in the barn and bushel boxes. And the threshing machine would separate the grain and blow the straw out into the barnyard into a big stack. And my grandfather always worked the stack here. It was a very hard job. I still remember him buttoning the top button here and pulling his hat down around his head, because it would throw grain out there and sting you like BBs. And then he would walk around the stack, and I would be up on the stacker, and it had a control, and he would tell me to aim it to the left or to the right or out, you know, and I would watch it and sit up on the thrashing machine. It would just shake the whole barn. We had a big tractor with a flat belt that drove the thrasher, and it had to be set up and leveled and run at a certain speed. Of course, we had the improved thrashing machine that had the band cutter. When the combine, the binder cut the wheat, it tied it with a string. Then there were knives on reciprocating arms that cut the string, which saved two men from cutting the strings and feeding the thrashing machine. So that was a good machine. It was a Frick, 22-inch cylinder. Frick company from Pittsburgh. You've probably seen the things on Channel 13 about the Frick family, and he was an industrialist and part of the Jamestown flood. Those industrialists that owned the
Johnstown flood.
The Johnstown flood.
I haven't seen it on Channel 13, but I read some of those.
And we had a Frick sawmill that the Frick company built in south of Pittsburgh, and Frick also built boilers and threshing machines and some other implements. But the holidays with the church, I still recall the candles and the smell and the choir. At one time, St. Clement's had 75 in the choir. And hearing the father give the mass, the sermon in Slovak, and then when he was done with that, he gave it in English.
Mm.
And the mass, of course, was in Latin, and you had your prayer book, but you didn't dare be on the wrong page.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Who would say something?
Somebody would be looking at you, either someone from the choir, I imagined, or, you know, maybe the nuns might see it, or perhaps the mother might see that you weren't on the right page. You had to pay attention.
Did you go to church as a family?
Oh, yes. Well, there wasn't any way to get there. The roads were mud. Our lane was steep, and we had to put chains on the car to get out in wintertime. And there wasn't any entity but the family. The family, you know, that was your world in those days. As far as mother going here and the children going there, that's not the family we knew. And St. Clement's, of course, was where the Palcos originally went, and all of my father's sisters and brothers and their families went to St. Clement's. And then back in the 40s, I guess, I could recall when the church was so crowded, there were two rows standing in the back, across the back. And then they built a church down in Glassmere, a new church, and some of it was Holy Family, and some of St. Clement's members, including some of my aunts and uncles, went to that church.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what it was like when you made your first communion?
Well, after instruction, I recall my sister and I, we were we went to the same grade in school. She was a little older than I was, but we always did everything together, and I remember being there and holding the candle and getting a new prayer book and a rosary, and then having a dinner at Palco's and with my grandmother there, and it was something that you felt that something was happening, you know, that you were another step in your religion, a little strengthening. And, that was something we felt strongly about.
And when your children made their first communion, was it pretty much the same?
Well, yeah, we tried to maintain the same thing about it, but we had a larger family. My wife and I had nine children, five girls and four boys, and that was a little less controlled than the earlier, you know, when I was a child, and things were a little more, I don't know if you want to call it less religious, but the sacraments were all there strongly, but it was a little more fun, I mean, more open than a party, and, but still, you still had that feeling. Moving step closer to your religion, a little stronger.
Did you always have statues in your home? Or
yes, we never really had any ceremonies.